Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Alongside my colleague Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the first ever and potentially the only ever Illegal Curve Zoomcast, where we're going to touch base on all the latest news in and around the NHL and your Winnipeg Jets. It is Thursday evening. It's about 20 minutes to 9 o'clock. I hope you're sitting back, relaxing, enjoying maybe a cold beverage or two, if that's your drink of choice on a Thursday night. But, Ezzy, it is nice to see you. It's strange to see you, I'll be honest, in that normally we see each other at least on a weekly basis. We haven't seen you aside from Zoom meetings and that sort of thing in a long while. But it is nice to see you. I have lost hair in the past 8 or 10 weeks of this pandemic, and you seem to be hairier than ever based on what I'm seeing on the video call right now.
Yeah, no, it is. First off, it is good to get the Illegal Curve Zoomcast going. We're not on air right now, but we're hoping to be back on air soon. But yeah, obviously I didn't get the memo, Drew, that you can now get your haircut, because I think it's been at least 3 months since I last got a haircut. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, my hair is not looking very good right now. You look very aerodynamic and very handsome.
I am sleek looking, while you are certainly a little bit more burly looking than normal, but I am envious of that head of hair of yours, that you're still, you have not succumbed to the ill effects of male pattern baldness at this stage in your life, especially with two young children. That's even what's most impressive about it.
Well, you can't really see the gray hairs on Zoom, but I definitely have a lot of gray hairs, but that's the thing when you can work at home, right? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, nobody cares. I really let my appearance slip, Drew. So, as soon as I have to go back to work, then I might get a haircut. But for now, you know, I'm just going to keep the Grizzly Adams thing going.
Well, I mean, I think what the audience really wants to know right now is, are you wearing pants?
I am wearing pants. Okay. I always wear pants in the house.
Really?
You know, I once in a while will put some shorts on, but it was freezing today.
No, I meant, are you? I didn't think you were wearing shorts. I just meant, have you completely abandoned the concept of pants altogether?
No, I am wearing pants. I'm not wearing nice pants. I have a pair of sweatpants on. They're comfy. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Comfortable is important.
Let's just say that we'll keep it, you know, waist up, and you can see that I'm wearing my IC shirt. So I'm ready to go here.
That's good. You're repping the brand. That's always important. Let's get started. Let's get right into it. The announcement came out a couple of days ago. It was sort of the details had leaked out over in drips and drabs, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty details of the NHL's return to play plan. Ezzy, before we get into those details, though, should this even be happening? Is there any reason? Is it good decision by the NHL to announce this return to play plan, given the uncertainties, given everything that we still don't know about how this COVID pandemic is going to play out? Is the NHL being irresponsible in, I'm going to use the word, making its players return to action?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Drew. It's the $500 million question, right? And when you look at what's happening in the U.S., especially here in Manitoba, we've been very lucky. Other provinces, you know, such as Saskatchewan, some of the Maritime provinces, I mean, the amount of cases pales in comparison to what you're seeing in the U.S., right? So you have really seen the continuation of cases in the U.S. And I think we might be joined by Scotty Billick here.
Yeah, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun is going to jump on with us as well for the Zoomcast. Scotty, can you hear us? Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Your mic's not on, Scott, so you're going to have to.
I know. Yeah. I got it.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm here. Scotty also has a nice haircut going here.
Yeah, it's well, you don't have one at all. Yours just let that thing looks awesome. You kind of look like Wolverine, but a little bigger. But yeah, no, it's good. And Drew, no hair as usual.
So. Yes, as he chose to describe me as sleek and aerodynamic, which was one of the most complimentary things he's ever said to me.
That's what I did. Hey. I lost a little bit of weight doing this, so I was quite happy with it.
Looking good, Scott. I like it. Yeah.
Oh, it must be all that COVID coverage. You can't eat as a result.
Oh. Don't remind me.
I won't. We won't. We're going to try and talk hockey with you, but you know, Scotty, you're here, so you might as well join us for the vicinity, or for the you know, the entirety of this Zoom cast, however long this debacle is potentially going to last, if that is still up in the air. But I was asking Ezzy, and Ezzy was giving his insight. I asked him, you know, before we get into the nitty-gritty details of the return to play plan, I asked him, you know, should the NHL even be going down this road? And as you, I'll let you finish your answer, Ezzy, but then Scott, I really want to hear from you about that and your perspective, because of course you come to it from your sports writer perspective, where you've been covering the Jets all season long. And then when this pandemic started, you've shifted your focus onto the COVID beat. So I want to get your answer on that as well. But Ezzy, back to you, you know, you're giving your thoughts about whether the NHL should even be venturing down this road.
Yeah, Scotty, I'll keep it pretty short. And, you know, we should also, you know, commend Scott for his awesome coverage, you know, yes, doing double duty for the Winnipeg Sun, covering, you know, the COVID-19 crisis, and then also obviously covering, you know, the Jets and the world of hockey. So you're obviously doing an amazing job, Scott, and I'm reading your tweets and your stories every day. But, you know, when you talk about where we're at, I mean, and you heard the announcement, we all, you know, have been reading about it, Scott's been writing about it. I mean, we know that there isn't going to be any NHL hockey until the earliest, the end of July. But, you know, when you're talking about, you know, whether or not the NHL should even return, I mean, I simply don't have the answer to that. And I can give you an opinion. And, you know, I'm kind of torn on this because, you know, the hockey fan in me, you know, we do the radio show, we all work in hockey, and, you know, we want the NHL to come back. But we also want, you know, the players, the team staff, everybody, you know, to be safe and healthy. And, you know, that's why, you know, when you talk about phase three and phase four, I mean, we know phase three isn't going to start until early July. It might even be late July.
July 10th is the earliest that phase three can begin, which is, of course, the training camp phase. That's what the NHL and NHLPA. So that announcement came out earlier this afternoon that not until July 10th. So if you're talking about a 3-week training camp, which is what they've been saying, you know, and 3 weeks at a minimum, you know, just extrapolate it out, you're not going to have any hockey really starting, you know, in an ideal situation at this point in time until, let's say, the first couple weeks of August. So that's when you're talking about starting with these play-in games, and you're talking about starting with these the round robin for the top four teams. But, you know, Scott, you know, like we said, you've covered both sides of this. I mean, you got your regular Jets hat, you got your COVID reporter hat.
Yeah.
King of COVID coverage is what I've dubbed you. Congratulations on that honor. But should they even be going down this road, from your perspective, from what you've being so heavily involved in it? Should they be even going down this road?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've thought about quite a bit. I mean, you have a lot of time to think while you sit at home and work all day and that sort of thing. And you know, if you would ask me a week ago, I probably would have said no. And I'm still kind of on that fence. Like, it's just like, it's a risk. It's risky to return. You don't need to necessarily return. You know, it's not like the sport is essential or anything like that, or any sport's essential. But then again, and I'm trying not to be, definitively, I would still probably say no, just because of the safety factors involved. You know, just the unknowns of this virus, right? You know, experts have been calling for a quote unquote COVID comeback or a resurgence of the virus, a second wave. You know, and that could happen in Canada perhaps by September. Now, maybe there isn't even a hub city here, or, you know, the whatever it is, but the playoffs would certainly be going on in September, just based on those dates. I mean, you're looking at, you know, probably 2 months to play everything out, maybe even 10 weeks. So 2.5 months to get everything done. Definitively, I would probably say no. But, you know, you're looking at, so the Premier League in England is going to start up on June 15th. The Bundesliga has already started up in Germany. They've done 3 UFC events now. They've done, what was it, 3 NASCAR races now. The problem with all these other sports, so I mean, 2 of them, well, the UFC notwithstanding, you know, the car racing, you're in your own car. There's not really a lot of risk involved. I mean, social distancing happens just naturally there. UFC, obviously, there is contact. Nobody's wearing a mask, that sort of thing. They had one case reported. I don't always trust the UFC numbers. But then there's the NHL.
Therein lies a problem right there, of course.
Well, you just wonder if anything's been hidden and the contracts, they had a stipulation in their UFC contracts where they couldn't even talk about the kind of the protocol and procedures that they put into place, right? So, you know, that already throws up all sorts of red flags. But anyways, you know, back to kind of hockey, and it's a contact sport. It's an impossible to avoid the contact. So if you're going to play, I mean, and the other problem is, so like, I mean, this, I don't know if the viewers of, you know, asymptomatic testing, symptomatic testing, obviously symptomatic testing is what is done primarily, at least here in Manitoba. They're starting to do asymptomatic testing. If you know, if people don't know at this point, symptomatic testing, you have symptoms, you're coughing, whatever. asymptomatic testing is, there is no symptoms, right? You're kind of, maybe you may not even have the virus at all, or if you do, it lies dormant, you don't know you have it, that sort of thing. So essentially that's what the NHL would be doing every single day. Once, well, who knows, we'll see what training camp brings with their testing procedures, but once the season starts or restarts or whatever you want to call it, they'll be doing daily testing. And I think they said, was it at night? And then they'll have the results the next morning or whatever. You know, to me, it's like, okay, well, that's about as much testing as you can really do to know if somebody is going to be symptomatic or is positive or not. Otherwise, you're going to have negative. Now, asymptomatic testing has its downfalls. It's, you know, there's a lot of false positives a lot of false negatives in that testing, just because the signs of the symptoms aren't there and that sort of thing. So, but you know, I've made it long. To try and shorten it is, I don't necessarily see an issue with them returning, as long as it's strict, it's safe as you can get it. I mean, I did a story earlier this week. I talked to Dr. Brent Rusin, who's our chief public health officer in Manitoba, and the way he kind of put it is like, well, well, we have to find ways to live with this virus, right? I mean, that's just kind of it. Like you do kind of with influenza or the common cold. Now, obviously, COVID is much worse than those, but until there's a vaccine, until there's an ability to eradicate the virus at a medical level, you kind of have to just learn to live with it. Something that's difficult to tell a player, you know, when you read the phase two plan that they put out earlier this week, for hockey, I mean, one of the first two paragraphs or whatever said, you know, this is potentially fatal, right? It's like watching one of these, like, medicine, like a commercial with a new drug. It's like, you know, all the side effects.
Don't take Lipitor, yeah, the side
effects. Yeah, don't take Lipitor, it could kill you, right? Like, and it's like, that is one of the risks. Now, NHL players are healthy. some of them do have underlying conditions, and some have talked about diabetes. Asthma even, right? I mean, and then there's other ones where, you know, maybe hypertension is the biggest factors when it comes to severe outcomes with COVID right now. Hypertension is one of the biggest conditions that leads to that severe outcome, whether you're intubated or whether you end up dying. Now, obviously, in Canada, we haven't been hit as hard as the U.S. has. And that's part of my other problem with returning is, you know, the U.S. is, I don't know enough about the U.S. situation to, you know, be somewhat of an, I don't know, authority or whatever on it, but it doesn't seem to me that the way that we've done it here in Manitoba, now you can call us lucky, you can call us all sorts of things, you know, but they got ahead of it early and whatever. In the U.S., it really depends state by state, and some states aren't even really, I'd venture to say, not taking it as serious as they should.
Well, let me jump in there, Scott, because you know, I pay particular attention to Kentucky,
right?
Of course, because that's where my wife's from. That's where my in-laws live. Of course, relatives are there. And Kentucky is a state that has taken it quite seriously. They've had a governor who's been quite proactive with his measures to try and protect the state. And even with all those steps he's taken, their numbers are huge, of course, compared to ours. But that's, you know, a function of population and you know, the cross-border functions that they still have, where, you know, you can still come into the states from other states that might not be taking it as seriously. Tennessee, which is, of course, on the border, is one of those states that at first wasn't taking it as seriously. But that, to me, is, you know, you're going to be sending, and you talked about the health of these players, and players are, you know, usually in peak physical condition, you're going to be sending them into, you know, the hot spot in all the world, in the United States,
yeah,
where this has done the most damage, where the death toll has passed 100,000 cases. So what I'm surprised about in all this is the NHLPA, I mean, the players are basically doing this for free. And they're doing it for free in that they've received all their paychecks on the season.
Yeah.
They have one paycheck that they have foregone thus far.
Yeah.
Which was due a couple months ago, but they've said, no, you know, we're going to put that one to the side because of escrow and things of that nature. If you're a player, you know, I'm going to use Matthew Perreault, for example.
Sure, yeah.
Veteran guy, got a young family.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how excited I would be to potentially be leaving my family or coming in and coming out with my family for a number of months. I know the chance to win the cup and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, you're doing this for free, basically. I don't know how excited I would be about that. And I'm sort of surprised that we haven't heard from more players who are currently going to be in the playoffs or in the play-in round voice their concerns. I know that Nick Foligno the other day said something about, well, they got to figure something out for families because there's no way I'm going to be away from my family for an indeterminate amount of time. And we know that Drew Doughty months ago said what he said because the Kings have no chance of being one of the 24 teams.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that I wonder what's happening under the surface that hasn't bubbled through yet.
Well, and I think, you know, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I think you're going to see that come up soon, right? Because, you know, in my opinion, it was an important step what happened this week, but it's far from the most important step that will happen, and that's the negotiation time between the players and the NHL and trying to figure out, you know, at the end of the day, the players hold the cards in this. If the players say no, there's no hockey, right?
Do you think it should go to a full vote of the NHLPA? Sorry for jumping in there. I want both of you to answer that.
I think it should go to a full vote? Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, You have a global pandemic right now. Mm-hmm. I think everybody in the NHL should have a voice on this. You know, coaches, players, trainers, everybody. Because, you know, if a team goes, everybody kind of has to go. And I haven't heard anything about this being voluntary other than the fact that if you do have an underlying health concern that's already noted, they will, you know, work with a player on a case-by-case basis. That might rule out a couple players. We'll see. I mean, it really depends if a player's wanting to risk it or not. But, you know, the NHL is going to, and the owners are going to have to play ball with the players here, in my opinion, because, you know, if the players say no, if the players aren't getting the family time they want, or the family's in the bubble, they just don't feel good about the testing protocol or procedures or whatever, all that sort of thing. I don't know. I mean, I guess that's part of it. You know, there's so many things to iron out here that haven't really, they, I don't know if they've met yet or not about those things, but that's where some of these more tense conversations are going to happen, because like Nick Foligno said, you know, there's no way in hell he wants to leave his family for 2 months, potentially, right?
Yeah. It could be a week and a half.
If
you lose in three games in the play-in round, it's no big deal, but none of these guys
are going to be gone for 2 months, right? I mean, two of the teams are guaranteed gone for 2 months, right? So you have the potential of rosters, who knows how what they end up being, the size, I imagine it'll be kind of like how the playoff expanded rosters are. But two teams are gone for a while, or for the longest time. Four teams are gone for a pretty long time, and eight teams are gone for at least a month or so themselves, right? And the teams kind of fall off, whatever. I think there's so much that needs to be ironed out here, and sometimes you want, like, is this even worth all doing this, right? Because, like, I mean, what is the threshold of cases that happens within a game? Let's say, you know, you're in the qualifying round. It's game three of a series. You have two teams playing each other. One guy tests positive on, let's just use the Jets and Flames. One guy tests positive on the Jets. They play two games already. This is game three. He tests positive that night. The next morning, they know it's 2-1 in the series for one of the teams. Okay, so one guy tests positive. Now, I assume you would be doing all the contact tracing, all that kind of stuff, to figure out who else might be affected. Well, what happens if, you know, three players on the Jets, let's say Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, and Connor Hellebuck all test positive? Well, there goes the team, right? Like, I mean, those guys aren't going to be allowed to play. They'll be thrown in quarantine. You also have to test the other team now, maybe because they've come into contact with each other over the last two games or three games or whatever it is. So there's all that stuff. I mean, you have to test the whole everybody. That would happen anyways because of what the rules or what they said would happen. But it's just like, I mean, at what point does a team get decimated so much, potentially, with this virus that they can't even play anymore or whatever? And then at that point, it's like, well, I mean, what are other players going to look at the Jets and say, well, this can't happen. Oh, this won't happen to us or whatever. Like, you're all in the same bubble, well, you know, in that hub city.
And a lot of people would say, Scotty, that you're, you know, what-ifing this to death. But I don't think the what-ifs you're describing are too far-fetched by any stretch of the imagination. No. But they're, you know, pretty reasonable what-ifs where one guy gets it and then he's in close contact with all the guys on the bench. I mean, yeah. Is every guy on the bench going to have their own water bottle? I assume that would
be. But are they all going to do, like, I don't know, when the mumps happened, I mean, a lot of people did this and that, and, you know, they changed the things for the mumps. It was, what, I don't know, 4 years ago now, the mumps? I can't remember how long
ago. I think it happened twice. It was one year and then another year. But, yeah, I mean, the NHL, so, it's not that long ago the NHL had a mumps outbreak, for God's sake. Right.
And so they were able to kind of do it there, and it didn't really spread that far. But, I mean, your star player, Sidney Crosby, everybody's seen the picture. It looks like Quagmire from Family Guy. Like, it's just way out here, you know? And so it's just like, I don't know. They're just, because of this virus, there's so many what-ifs with this virus, right? And there's so many unknowns that it's so hard to answer questions that of things that haven't happened yet. And then when I talked to Dr. Rusin earlier this week about that, he's like, you know, would you have to shut it all down? Would you have to quarantine a whole team? He's like, I don't, you know, he said he wouldn't know until the circumstance kind of prevents itself. And then you see all the specifics of that circumstance, whether or not you could just quarantine two guys and that would be it or whatever. But I mean, you quarantine one guy, he's gone for 2 weeks, right? You quarantine two guys, they're all gone for 2 weeks if that's how they decide the rules, right? And mm-hmm. that's what the medical advice is for anybody right now. So
we remember that Wednesday. It wasn't that, I mean, it wasn't that long ago chronologically. It seems like it was 10 years ago where Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, I mean, they were teammates and they both ended up with COVID. And that's what sort of, you know, that was the tipping point that shut down professional
sports. Well, that's the thing. Like other teams, like they were worried about at that time about other teams that were in that locker room. And then other people were testing positive. And so obviously they didn't have the sanitation protocols that they would have had now, right? Like the sanitation protocols, how they clean everything after. I assume it'll be much better. Like my guess is the NHL will make it as safe as possible. Like I can't, because everybody and their brother will rip apart the plan if it doesn't have it. Medical, doctors, everything, right? Like we're all going to see what the plan is, you know, and that plan has to look good for the players, for the PA. I mean, or for, yeah, for the PA and the players, obviously, and there's just, you guys might know more than I would about the legal side of things, well, especially Drew, but, you know, just in terms of, like, how...
I just play a lawyer on the radio, I'm not actually a lawyer.
I was going to say, did Drew get a law degree that I'm not aware of?
I thought you were a lawyer. Why am I? No, you. No, it's Dave. Dave, right?
I'm the handsome one.
Either way, I imagine there's some sort of like, what's the recourse for a player who does get sick or what? Like, I don't know, right? And are there
liability
expanded,
laws?
You're right. Is there expanded medical benefits, insurance, all that stuff? Like, I think there's just a lot of things that have to happen between now and then that really have to fall in the line before this all kind of takes place.
You know, sorry to cut you off, Scotty, and that's not even just a legal question, right? Because those are medical questions, ethical questions.
Yeah.
You know, further to your point, you know, I wanted to ask you about that conference call yesterday with Andrew Kopp because Drew and I weren't on it, but I know you were on it, and I listened to almost all of it. It was about 30 minutes, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I remember you asking Andrew Kopp, you know, about the return to play protocol and, you know, what he thought was good about it and what he thought was bad about it. And, you know, the question I was just thinking as you were speaking of asking you is, did you get the impression, you know, from Andrew Kopp's answer to your question and just his general tone that he was kind of thinking along the same lines as we are, that it's nice to get this return to play 2014 protocol. Okay, you know, the Jets are in, You know, the Hawks are in, you know, the Habs are in, but yeah. Really when it comes to the next steps, it is really that great unknown, and we don't really have that many answers, even at the highest levels.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, I think that's what – I think there's just, you know, even going right now just to the border issue and when players trying to come back here to even skate is, you know, Andrew Copp laid it out the best that anybody I've heard lay it out. I'm not coming to Canada right now because I can't. I'm not going to sit in my apartment, and, you know, every guy's apartment might be different, but you might not even be able to work out in that apartment, right? Like, and if you're, you know, secluded to that place for 14 days, it's pointless, right? Like, why would a guy come back? Cop said himself, I'll go to Florida. And then, you know, assuming he works out at a BB&T Center or at the Amalie Arena in Tampa, depending on where he would go, and because it's all sanctioned. And then there's a 17% of players right now that are in Europe that can't even participate in phase two over there because they're not NHL facilities and the NHL can't track what's going on over there, right? So, I don't know. Like, this whole phase two to me just seems like it's kind of, you know, it benefits some but not everybody, and you can't really get everybody into the same building. You can't get teams back together. You can't do any of that because of the border laws, and those haven't changed yet. And I assume, you know, that they end up will change. I mean, that's just kind of my theory on it. Why would you have three Canadian teams kind of on this short list if, you know, discussions hadn't at least happened at the provincial level and also ongoing dialogue at the federal level to grant an exemption for pro athletes or at least hockey players.
And we saw the letter that the Premier of Alberta, Jason Kenney, sent to the Prime Minister, pleading for that exception to occur. I don't know that, I mean, and this is more of a political consideration than anything as much. I mean, based on a health consideration, there's no reason for the NHL, for all these American players to be allowed to cross the border.
Yeah.
And politically, I'm not sure that it's a win, that I don't see a clamoring of people demanding that, you know, NHLers be able to get an exception to avoid the quarantine if they return to Canada. So I don't know that it's going to happen. And I don't know that the hub cities in Canada are going to happen. I don't expect to see an influx of Jets players coming to Canada.
Yeah.
The Jets would be better off sending everybody running their training camp out of St. Paul or something right now. Or go find a nice resort town. Go to Lake Placid, New York. They got a nice facility there, and go do it there or something.
And, you know, Drew, we already heard earlier this week, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, that the Vancouver Canucks are considering practicing. I should say having their training camp, not practicing, but kind of the same thing, but maybe possibly having it in the state of Washington. So you wonder, you know, we know that the Jets have a lot of American players, right? And if the hub cities are both in the U.S., and we expect at least one of the two hub cities, if not both, to be in the U.S., you wonder, you know, if the Jets decide to hold their training camp / practices in New York or Michigan or somewhere close to a hub city, right? Because you are going to have to go through all those logistical issues with players coming back. So I mean, there's just so many questions that need to be answered.
I think the Jets basically own Hermantown, Minnesota right now. I think they have half the population on their roster, so you might as well just go to Hermantown. I think Scotty's cutting out. They can't hear what he's saying right there, but that's okay.
Scotty muted himself.
I think he muted himself, but that's okay. We'll get him back up and running in a second here.
As a backyard rink, Drew, that the Jets can use.
Yeah, maybe, exactly.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now, Scotty. Yeah.
I'll just take the headphones off then.
There you go. Technology at its finest.
I contemplate, like, would Grand Forks be a thing? Like, they have a state-of-the-art facility in UND. I don't know if the NHL would allow that. It's not an NHL facility, but maybe some exceptions are made where you have a legitimate facility that could hold, you know, players and that sort of thing. And there's no university going on right now and there's no hockey there or anything. So you could use that rink or whatever.
Well, you know, you send the Flames to Stockton, California. They have their farm team there. You send the Oilers to Bakersfield, California. They have their farm team there. You send the Canucks over the border to Washington, you know, you send the Jets to Grand Forks or somewhere else. I mean, you send, you don't worry about the Senators because they're not playing for the next 9 months or whatever. And you send the Leafs and the Habs somewhere, you know, maybe the Habs go to upstate New York and the Leafs go somewhere right across the border. Then maybe they share a facility with the Sabres or take the Sabres facility because they're not going anywhere. But it seems bizarre. I mean, I agree with Andrew Kopp. There's no reason for that, for players, the Jets, U.S.-based players, to come over the border so they can sit in their condos in Winnipeg for 2 months and not do anything, or 2 weeks, pardon me, and not do anything.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing. Like, there's so many guys that are residing in the U.S., right? You know, we don't have a full number, but Chevy said that there's less than a handful of guys, you know, in Winnipeg. And it's the same with the Bombers. With the Bombers, we're trying to, you know, restart. They have – most of their guys are all American, right? I mean,
yeah.
And if some of them are Canadian, they also reside elsewhere. Or because even coming from a Canadian, you know, anywhere else in Canada, let's say, you know, I don't know, Nathan Beaulieu or somebody's in Ontario, whoever, right? Well, they come into Canada from there, or come into Manitoba from there, it's still the same rule, 14 days, right?
Absolutely.
So nothing's changed. Like, even if you're in Canada, you can't do it. So, yeah, and obviously the U.S. has granted an exemption, which, well, there was a lot of people not very happy about, because the whole thing about this that they've talked about in Canada, at least, and the reason why the border is closed, is they don't want any sort of reimportation of the virus, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to start bringing the virus back into the country. Like, you can control it by closing your borders. You can control it by having all sorts of different things. But if you open up the U.S. border to the place that's the epicenter of COVID right now,
yeah.
What do you expect is going to happen if you start letting people through, you know? And even if you let NHL players through, I mean, who's to say they don't have it? And obviously they do testing and it'd be easier to track and all that stuff. But again, I just, to what end right now? And I don't know. And maybe that changes in a couple months. And, you know, phase three isn't going to start till July 10th. Well, that's, well, I mean,
at the earliest.
Was that 6 weeks away? It's not that far away. And,
yeah.
You know, it's not like the virus is gone anywhere. So it's just going to have to be a very, very good plan if they do it. It's going to have to be very player friendly, I think, because you're going to have to please the players. You know, they're the ones that are going out there kind of risking a lot of things, not just the inherent risks that come with hockey, but the inherent risks that also come with this virus right now.
Well, and I think that what this has all shown, I think the return to play announcement and everything else, is that the NHL, come hell or high water, is going to do whatever it takes to finish this season, for better or worse, yeah. And for right or for wrong. And I'm on the side of that it is wrong. I do not believe they should be even embarking on this road.
Yeah.
But the NHL, come hell or high water, is going to finish the season because they need the revenue. And that's the only driving force, and that's the motivation for 100% for what they're doing, no matter what it ends up costing them. I mean, they're willing to take a $5 million hit on the testing bill in order to try and recoup the whatever losses from their TV contracts and things of that nature.
Yeah. But that's the only revenue they can really gain back, isn't it? Like, you know, no tickets, no fans, no nothing, right? There's no merch sales really going to be happening at games, nothing. Like,
they don't want
to have economic impact for.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to have a lot of people coming in. So, you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, I guess you're trying to just, I don't know what it's like to be a $5 billion a year company and, you know, bleeding money right now. So I don't know what that means. But I just wonder at what point you just cut your losses. How much is all this planning costing? And how much more of a bill are you going to have to eat in terms of, like you said, testing and all that kind of stuff, just to, you know, finish a season that, does it really need to be finished? You know, like, yeah. I mean, was it Ryan Reeves who said it? You know, it's like the NHL won't let them go to the Olympics because it's, you know, because of safety concerns and because guys might get injured to and come back and it affects their team. But, you know, at the same time, they'll try and restart hockey during a global pandemic. It's like, it's so weird, right? It makes no sense. You can't go to the, and I know there's more than just being players getting injured, you know, going to the Olympics. Obviously there's a, you know, it again, a money thing for the NHL there too.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, from what we know, just from the outside, it's like, you won't send players into harm's way in, you know, whatever it was, South Korea or wherever you're going to hold the Winter Olympics, where Pyeongchang. You won't send them there, but you'll send your players into hub cities during a global pandemic. Just very strange yeah, just very strange kind of thing. So
we all know the answer to that question. Then let's move on, because I think we've sort of covered the COVID and the medical side of this pretty well and talked about that. I want to move on to the specifics around the return to play announcement, the details about the 24 teams and the play-in round and everything else. I want to get your guys' thoughts on that. Before we do, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors here on the Illegal Curve Zoomcast, our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Now that we are moved on to phase two here in Manitoba, Rumors is going to be reopening on Tuesday. So check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com. They got a whole list of procedures that they're going through to make sure that they're in accordance with the Manitoba health laws. But you can get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. Our good friends at Bernstein's Deli have been open throughout this pandemic. The restaurant side has not been. That's going to reopen starting on Monday. So you can sit down and have your Illegal Curve sandwich as opposed to having to take your Illegal Curve sandwich to go. So that's a nice change, because I know you enjoy sitting while you dine on your sandwich. Also,
I was going to say, Drew, before you do the next read, that maybe we should take Scotty to Rumors. And then maybe before that, we can take him for an Illegal Curve sandwich at Bernstein's and then, you know, go see a little stand-up comedy.
There you go. As a means of saying thank you for joining us on the inaugural Illegal Curve Zoomcast. That's a good plan. Well, I'm not sure the budget allows for that. That $10 budget might break our bank, but we'll see if we can.
Me and you will go. We'll ditch Drew.
There you go. Now you're talking. You can rub a few shekels together to make that work. Also want to give a shout out to our buddy Zappia at Zappia Group Realty, Frank and Mauro Zappia. If you're in the market, maybe you're looking to buy now that interest rates are pretty low. Maybe you're looking to sell because for whatever reason, give a shout out to our buddies at Zappia Group Realty online at zappiagroup.com. And of course, if you're anything like me, your dental appointment got canceled. As a result of this pandemic, the dental offices are going to start to reopen, I'm sure, with the litany of health and safety concerns at front of mind. Check out our buddy, Dr. Les Rikus at Linden Market Dental Center. You can check him out online, of course, lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So that's it for the, had to pay the bills there, of course, but giving our sponsors a little bit of a plug. Let's talk about the details surrounding the plan. The top four teams when the shutdown occurred, in each conference, they're through to the first round of the playoffs. The next eight in each conference are going to play a best of five play-in series. The top four teams, as I mentioned, they're going to be playing a three-game round robin to determine their seeding. So what are your thoughts overall on sort of the playoff format that was announced by the NHL earlier this week? I'll start with you, Mr. Ginsberg.
Yeah, well, I mean, firstly, I mean, the Jets get in, which is awesome for us here in Winnipeg, even though, you know, there were other teams that were only a couple of points out, such as the Buffalo Sabres. But really, if you think about it, guys, this is, I think, the more fair option here than, you know, just ending the regular season and then going right into the playoffs, right? So you have some other teams that obviously benefit from this that were really out of it when the season was postponed, right? So you're
Chicago and Montreal, come on down.
Exactly. Those are the two teams, Drew, that I was going to mention. So obviously, you know, there were some issues raised by teams. We know those teams. The Carolina Hurricanes and the Tampa Bay Lightning were those two teams. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, Chicago, they were obviously big sellers prior to the trade deadline, right? Like, if you knew that there was a chance of playing into the playoffs, are you telling me you're going to trade Robin Leonard? Like, I don't see that happening. So it's not, you know, perfect, but I think when, you know, Gary Bettman spoke and, you know, when you heard NHL general managers speak and players speak, I think everybody acknowledged, you know, that it's not a perfect format, but I think it's probably, you know, the best format that they could come up with. Obviously, you know, Mark Scheifele of the Jets was heavily involved on the players' side, you know, with the return to play committee. So, you know, I really like it. And, you know, going back to what we kind of talked about, you know, 15, 20 minutes ago, I mean, we still don't know, obviously, that there is going to be a continuation of the 19-20 season, right? But when you start thinking about, you know, late July, early August, even though, you know, a lot of us are going to be, you know, at the cottage or, you know, on some type of summer vacation, I mean, it is going to be really exciting when you start talking about some of these different best of five series, right? Including the Jets and the Flames, because, you know, when you talk about, you know, those two teams specifically, I mean, they're pretty evenly matched. I think we'd all give the Jets, you know, the edge, especially when it comes in goal with Connor Hellebuck. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, breaking down, you know, forwards and defense, and obviously, Scott, we want to, you know, break down that series a little bit with you here.
Yeah.
But you're not going to have too many series where you can say definitively, you know, one team has a huge edge over another team, right? Like, I don't think you're going to see a lot of three-game sweeps. You might see one, you might see two, but I think for the most part, you know, you're going to see some pretty evenly matched hockey. So overall, Drew, you know, again, to make a long answer short, I mean...
You made a long answer longer.
Well, probably. That's what I tend to do. That's why we usually have a three-hour show, right? But,
yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, even though there are tons of health and safety concerns, and you might be right, Drew. I mean, this might be, you know, a road that the NHL shouldn't be going down when you consider that there are so many unknowns, especially, you know, with how many active cases you currently have in the U.S. We forget that, you know, outside of Manitoba and Saskatchewan and, you know, certain provinces, I mean, you know, you look at some of the states, you know, we talked about, you know, Kentucky earlier, you look at even New York, even though the curve is flattened, I mean, you still have a lot of active cases and it's still a huge concern in many states in the U.S. and many provinces. So even though you have all of those, you know, unknowns and concerns, if you put that aside, which is obviously very hard to do, just thinking about late July, early August hockey, you know, 16 teams going at it. And then obviously, you know, the other eight teams, you know, battling for seeding. You know, it's going to be some really exciting hockey if it actually does happen.
Scotty, your thoughts on the format? I mean, I know they went 24 teams. Let me ask you this, and this might be the cynic in me coming out. If the 23rd and the 24th place team, let's go with the 23rd and 24th place team. If they weren't the Chicago Blackhawks and the Montreal Canadiens, two big markets, if they were the Ottawa Senators and they were the San Jose Sharks, two less impactful markets. Is this the format they come up with, or do you think that the fact they were trying to shoehorn Chicago and Montreal in there by any means necessary?
Yeah, it's a good conspiracy theory, I suppose. I mean, and a little bit of, you know, maybe there's some truth to it. Who knows?
I'm a member of QAnon, is what I am, actually.
Oh, geez, great. All right, I'm going to leave now. No, I'm just, but you look at how they structured it, and the 24 teams kind of makes sense, right? You have eight teams playing in a play-in series. You have, you obviously have the top four teams. You have everybody's playing. Like, and I get it. And you look at the standings, and I pulled them up while Ezzy was talking. And you know, Montreal Canadiens, sure, they're 9 points behind. Actually, 10 points, sorry, behind Columbus. That's pretty difficult mountain to climb when I think, let's see, Montreal only had 11 games left. It's not going to be easy to do. You look at Chicago, they're only 6 points back. And if we go back 2 months, nobody really wanted to run away with the wild cards, right? And
we know in the NHL, gaining 6 points.
Oh, very difficult.
Yeah.
Very much playoff hockey. I agree with you. I don't have an issue as much with Chicago being in it because of that. Montreal, you can argue, 24 teams is a nice even number. It gets the most number of teams in. I'll go to one thing that Rusin told me in my story that I wrote earlier this week about is, you know, there's a lot of benefit that, so there's more to health than this virus is what he's talked about. There's a point here. You bring all these teams in. You have 24 different markets that get to kind of experience some normalcy for just a little bit. You know, for some teams, it's going to be for, you know, less than a week, or, you know, a week, you know, 10 days or whatever. You know, for some other markets, it's going to be longer because players are going to go far. It gives you something to hope for, something to cheer about, something to, you know, the mental health aspect of it, just, you know, the boost that it gives. You know, to me, if you could have fit all 31 teams in, why not? You know, we're in such a weird, does any of this matter is, I guess, the question you have to ask yourself. Does it matter if there's 24 teams? And I still don't understand the argument. Why didn't you just keep it at 16 and blah, 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 blah. I don't get that. It's like we're literally living in times that none of us, you know, have experienced, and only very, you know, elderly people have experienced it, and maybe another time, like, you know, polio and stuff like that. But completely different, right? Because, you know, no social
media. By the way, Scott, you're a little rusty, because this would be the time where typically Ezzy or Dave would jump in and say, well, Drew, you were around for the global pandemic of 1920 or whatever it was, because you're 130 years old. So you're a little rusty on that side.
Like, Drew, tell us about the 1919 general strike.
There you go. Exactly. Like a joke of that nature. Yes.
No, but, you know, Scott, you make good points. And you know, when you talk about, you know, the big picture, right, like sports is way down there. And yeah. I agree with you. And you know, you were obviously pretty vocal earlier this week on Twitter with all of the outrage with the 24 game format, right? Like at yeah. the end of the day, this is what the NHL and the NHLPA have decided to go with, right? So it doesn't really matter if there's, you know, a few hundred fans on Twitter that aren't happy about it. The reality is more teams get a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup, right? And, you know, we mentioned it earlier here in Winnipeg, selfishly, you know, the Jets get a crack at, you know, getting yeah. into the playoffs. So we like that. And obviously the organization likes that. But, I mean, come on. I mean, there's no way of completely making this fair when you're talking about, you know, these unprecedented times. I mean, the NHL, unless you're talking about, as you mentioned, 100 years ago, I mean, the NHL has never had to deal with something like this, definitely in, you know, all of our lifetimes, right? So I think, you know, this is pretty fair. And I think people have to get over that and realize that there's still, as we talked about, a chance this doesn't happen. And, you know, for all of those people that were, you know, asking if, you know, the play-in games were going to, you know, count towards regular season statistics, I realize the NHL addressed that today, Scotty, but yeah, I mean, how could that possibly count towards the regular season?
I don't know.
Yeah. Let me ask a quick question though, Ezzy. You mentioned the season, the regular season is completely at an end now. You know, the NHL has deemed that to be closed. When do I get my money for winning your hockey draft?
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime you want. I guess you did win, right? I think you were up by like 50 points. So I don't think that another 10 games would have mattered.
No, to use a horse racing term, going back to my Kentucky roots, I was a wire-to-wire winner. And the only reason I'm talking about this is, Scotty, you have to understand, when it comes to a regular season hockey draft, I'm literally at the bottom each and every year. I had God on my side this time because I was partnered up with Rabbi Leibel. And so I need to, as many people as possible to know that yeah. I successfully won a hockey draft, a regular season hockey
draft. There you go. Three of us know, and your two listeners know now.
you had Leon Draisaitl. You had David Pasternak. I mean, you had a good team.
I had just bad drafting by everybody else if you had both those guys. I mean,
I had a good team. Let me ask you guys this, talking about the format, and, I don't really have a quibble if it's, you know, however many teams get into your point, Scott. It's, you know, you're in unprecedented times. You know, how can you get that upset about this right now, even though, you know, on Twitter that's, you know, a cottage industry is getting upset about nothing.
Yeah.
The part that I find odd is that the top four teams have to play this three-game round robin. I know why they're playing it, so that they can get some games underneath them. But, the Philadelphia Flyers, all of a sudden, who were a country mile behind the Boston Bruins for top spot in the Eastern Conference. Well, I mean, you're talking about a three-game round robin. The Philadelphia Flyers could be the number one seed in the East. If you're the Bruins, you have to be a little bit off-put, I would think, about the format for the top four teams in each conference.
Probably. I mean, I don't know. I just don't.
Yeah, I know.
I don't care. You know, I don't care if teams are upset about it. And I don't, just to me, if you're upset about it, I get it. If you're not included, I mean, you know, if you look at the best team going into the whole pause was the Los Angeles Kings. They won 7 straight. They're 8-1-1 in their last 10, right? So maybe they're a little upset. They're never going to catch anybody. I think they had like 64 points or something like that. But, it's just like everybody that had a mathematical chance that was actually, you know, with also some common sense, I guess, involved in it too, is in the playoffs. And, yeah, I know it includes Montreal. Who cares? You know, it to me, it doesn't matter. You're going to have 10 weeks of hockey after you've gone, you know, maybe 5 months, 5 or 6 or 4 or 5 months without any at all, longer than, you know, most off seasons or any off season really, right? Because, you know, you really get 2 months off, and then you start having preseason games in the second half of September. You get like 2.5 months, maybe three total. But, you know, hockey's such a big deal in Canada, and I think that's, you know, where you're going to feel this the most among people, is that, you can just get behind something, anything right now. Right. That isn't just like, oh, you know, the death count is here, and this we got all these new cases, and you know, the restrictions that are in place. I can't go anywhere, and obviously that's lifting in Manitoba. But you know, what does this do for some people in Ontario or even Quebec who have been the hardest hit in Canada? Just to have that outlet now to, you know, for 2 or 3 hours on a night, every second night until your team goes out, you can kind of just forget and watch your team that you've always loved and whatever. I mean, I just think there's so many benefits to that that transcend fair and having just 16 teams and tradition and all that garbage that I've heard. I don't care about any of that. I care about, you know, what's healthy for people, what's best for the game, what's exciting. And really at the end of the day, it's just like, if you can play hockey again, I mean, that's such a big step forward. If that's, you know, from where we were 2 months ago, and we didn't have any idea what was going to come next. You know, we didn't know. I literally took an Uber from the Edmonton airport or Edmonton, downtown Edmonton, to that hotel. I had no idea what was happening. I flew to Calgary that morning. You have no idea what's going to happen. I didn't know if I was ever going to cover an NHL game, you know, for who knows, it could be a year, 2 years, or everybody's talking about a vaccine needs to happen and all this. You know, now that you might even have this plan where you can come back and play, I'm not so sure about the safety of it all, but if they do go forward with it, I think there's a lot of benefit for people. And I think that's where you kind of just have to think about it at the end of the day, is that this is just, it's a good thing for the hockey world to include as many teams as you can. And that's why I say, if all 31 teams somehow got in and they did this whole big March Madness style type tournament where it was, you know, whatever, I still think that would have been cool too and fair, because it's just everybody's involved, right? It this year, who cares if there's an asterisk next to the cup, all that stuff, doesn't matter, because it's so, this is a year like no other, right?
And Scott, what about the fact that, you know, 8 teams that don't make the playoffs will have an opportunity at the draft lottery, right? So you're talking about, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers, Drew, further to your point, right? Possibly having a high seed in the Eastern Conference, but you have teams like the Winnipeg Jets that could easily still be in the draft lottery if they lose to the Calgary Flames, right? And, you know, you mentioned mathematics, and I obviously can't figure out the NHL draft lottery scenarios, but...
Your dad's a math professor, for God's sakes.
Well, I still can't figure it out, Drew, because, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, each team should just have odds, but I realize that there's, you know, different scenarios, but, I mean, that's something that I don't think, you know, some other teams will be happy about. And then I think this is something that, you know, Elliot Friedman brought up in 31 Thoughts. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, the teams that aren't going to make it to the play-in round, the qualification round. So you're talking about, you know, Scotty mentioned the LA Kings and, you know, Detroit Red Wings, teams like that, my New Jersey Devils. I mean, if the play-in round starts in, whether it's late July, early August, and the 2020-2021 season doesn't start until December 2020, January 2021, think about how many months those teams are going to be off before they've played, right? So you're talking about, what, 7 or 8 months? Since
longer than that, 9 right? months. I mean, when did that shutdown happen, Mark?
I don't think those teams are going to be happy about that, right? Like, if you're, you know, like Steve Yzerman, or, you know, pick any of the different general managers, owners, you know, players on these teams, like, you know, are you happy that you're not going to be playing in games if you're, you know, Nico Hischier, or, you know, if you're whoever you want to, you know, throw out there.
Jack Eichel. I mean,
Dylan Larkin, like any of the top superstars on those 7 teams, right? Like, you're not going to be playing hockey for basically 3/4 of a year.
I think the coolest thing would have been, sorry to jump in, but I think the coolest thing would have been for the 8 teams that weren't, or, well, I guess it's 7. I mean, you really can't, it's hard to even everything up with 31 teams. But let's say in a perfect world, you could have had another mini tournament that would run maybe even just before the everything else or something like that, where you would play all these bad teams would play for the top, you know, the number one pick and whatever, right? It's kind of like a draft Stanley Cup sort of thing. Like, I don't know. It's just, to me, it's like, involve as many people as you can right now because none of it matters. And you know, yeah, obviously the cup's on the line and that's a big deal. You know, was the 2012-2013 cup have an asterisk because only is a half a season? I don't think anybody even thinks about that when the Chicago Blackhawks won it for the second time.
The parade still went down the street and the fans were still out there drinking.
And the banner flies and, you know, nobody's looking at that banner. It's, you know, this isn't the Houston Astros or Lance Armstrong or whoever, right? Like these are, you know, at the end of the day, whatever of the 24 teams wins the tournament, earned it, right? Like you still have to go there and take care of business, right?
And it's an even playing field, right? Like no team has an advantage. When you haven't played hockey for, you know, we're talking about, like you said earlier, 4 months, possibly 4.5, 5 months. I mean, the Boston Bruins or Tampa Bay Lightning don't have an edge over, you know, the Winnipeg Jets or the Vegas Golden Knights or the Montreal Canadiens, right? All of these teams are dealing with these unprecedented circumstances. Everybody's going to have to deal with all of these hoops, right? So,
I mean, Tampa's going to get Steven Stamkos back. They might not have had him for the first round, right?
And Columbus is going to possibly get Seth Jones back against the Leafs, right? So
it's like Tampa's only going to get better, really. Like you're adding a Steven Stamkos to the lineup, and Tampa really has no excuses.
Basically, the only two players on a playoff team that aren't going to be healthy are Nick Bjugstad of the Penguins. We know he's out for the year, and then there's still the big question mark about Brian Little of the Jets. And, you know, allow me to use that as a seamless opportunity to touch on our last topic on tonight's Illegal Curve Zoom cast, the inaugural Illegal Curve Zoom cast, the Jets and the Flames. And over the next number of weeks, we're obviously going to break down this matchup in more detail, but just sort of a macro view of this matchup, a best of five series, an old Smythe division series between the Flames and the Jets. And I think it's kind of ironic that back in the day, the team that the Jets had their only playoff success against was, of course, the Calgary Flames, defeating them in two playoff series. But how do the Jets, from your perspective, guys, match up against the Calgary Flames team? I think we'd all agree, of course, that the goaltending battle is one-sided in favor of the Jets. That's if Connor Hellebuyck continues to play at the level that he was playing at pre-pandemic.
I don't know if it's definitely one-sided. I don't know if it's as one-sided, though, as it's being portrayed by some people, though. I'm not saying, you know, in the media. I'm just saying by, you know, some Jets fans, I think, when they saw that the Jets would be playing the Flames, I think, you know, some fans were, you know, licking their chops and saying, well, we've got, you know, Connor Hellebuyck. But I mean, Cam Talbot has had a pretty underrated year in Calgary. And, you know, we know Big Save Dave isn't bad either. But, you know, so I'm not disagreeing with you, Drew, but I just don't think that in any of the eight series – you can say that there's one team that's a heavy favorite. I'll pick the Jets all day long. I mean, I don't have any money, but if I did have money, then I would put money on the Jets.
You better have my money still.
Yeah, I do. But when you're talking about, you know, a best of five, I would pick the Jets in probably, you know, four or five, but I wouldn't pick them in three.
Well, I don't think anybody's expecting any sweeps, but I mean, that's the great unknown, of course, of all this is there's no time to sort of get your feet underneath you. There, you know, if you're shaky for a game or two, you're really behind the eight ball. Whereas in a seven game series, if you lose the first two, we have seen teams then sort of find their legs and rattle off three or four in a row to get back into a series. These best of fives are quickies. And as a result, you have to be ready when the puck drops on the first game there, Scotty.
Yeah, unquestionably, right? I mean, you go down 2-0 in a best of five, you're already on, you know, you're I don't know I don't think there's going to be any stats on really who comes back from a best of five, not for, it's been a while. But
25, 30 years.
Yeah, but, you know, so, yeah, it's, you know, you have to come out strong. And, you know, the things that I look at, you know, I would pick the Jets in that series. I think goaltending goes a long way, and David Rick didn't have the best season. Now, do they start Cam Talbot for the playoffs? Probably not. You know, I don't see that. He was their backup, obviously. Better numbers than Riddick all around, but, you know, that's, you know, they're going to go with their number one there, just like, you know, any other team is. But I do think that the Jets have the upper hand. I don't think the Jets penalty kill with Kopp and Lowry, and let's say Morrissey and DeMello or whoever you put back there. I think that penalty kill is very good. It was very good coming into this, into the pause, when they're starting to get healthy again. We saw what that penalty kill can do when they have Kopp and Lowry working as a tandem on top, at the top. So I like that. I didn't think the power play was as bad as it was at times. I think that power play is lethal all the time. The potential for lethal, lethality, whatever.
This is what happens. You do podcasts at 9:40 p.m.
Like, I think the Jets own the special teams. Like, I think they win the special teams. I don't think the Jets are as bad as they maybe looked at the end of season stats in the penalty kill once you start this again with everybody healthy. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's, I mean, when you speak of the special teams, you speak of the penalty kill. We know how bad it was at the early part of the year.
But
again, from January 1st on, they were, what were they, top? If they weren't the best in the league, they were top 3.
They weren't the best, but they were close. Yeah, like I'd say top 5.
Like, and you mentioned two players there, Scotty, that are huge, right? Like Andrew Kopp is arguably the Jets' best penalty killer. And Dylan DeMello, we know, is also an effective penalty killer. And one of the reasons why Kevin Cheveldayoff acquired him, right, from the Ottawa Senators, because he's such a good defensive defenseman. So I think you're right. I think you'd look at the special teams in the regular season and you'd see, you know, a mediocre power play and, you know, not a very good penalty kill. But in the second half of the season, the Jets actually had one of the better penalty kills in the league. So I agree with you. And I think even though we give the Jets the edge in goal and we give the Jets the edge when it comes to, you know, game breakers on forward, you have to throw all of that out when you're talking about a best of five series after 4 months of inactivity, right? So that's what's so amazing about this, right? Like I still think when you talk about Calgary, like Johnny Gaudreau's coming off of a down year, right? Sean Monahan, Elias Lindholm, his offensive totals were down as compared to the 2018-19 season, right? But if these guys get hot, and we know that Matthew Tkachuk was having a career year, right, on pace for a career year, I mean, the Flames have some dangerous players. So having said all that, and obviously I don't want people to think watching this to think that, you know, a Flames fan, because obviously not, but I still think that you have to give them, you know, a certain amount of respect because they've still got a pretty good hockey team there.
Well, yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead, Scotty.
But I think undoubtedly. I don't think anybody can take anybody lightly because you just don't know. And you won't know until you hit the ice, right? There's a lot of teams that could be very good. Who knows? Carey Price could just be otherworldly and carry the Canadiens to who knows where, right? Like
that's why the Penguins allegedly weren't. I mean, they voted for it, but they weren't happy with the format because they had to face Carey Price in a short series.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing. Like this Jets Flames series, you can pick a clear cut, and I do think it is the Jets. I just think they have a better team. But again, that's what I do for a living. I cover this team. You know, I saw maybe some of the intricacies that, the broader NHL world doesn't always get to see because they just don't follow it as closely. And I'll be honest. I mean, Calgary, I don't know as much about Calgary as, you know, maybe the people in Calgary, right? Like it's a contested series like we've talked about here. I don't think there's anybody going 3-0 in that first round. And you might have somebody. I mean, it does happen. But I think it's going to be a good series. I do think the Jets have an edge, but, you know, who knows? I mean, Calgary, you don't really know. Calgary was so good last year, not this current season, but, like, the previous one, obviously. And then this year they were just kind of what's going on? Like, why are they middling or whatever it is, you know, down with like the wildcard teams? What happened?
And when you consider the adversity both teams went through this year, right? I remember, you know, talking about this when Illegal Curve was still on air, right? Like, you know, you go back, it seems like, you know, the Bill Peters, situation.
Wasn't that 5 years ago?
Exactly. I mean, it might as well have been 2014 as opposed to 2019, right? So, I mean, that just feels like an eternity ago. And you talk about, you know, some of the injuries that the Flames suffered. I mean, obviously, you know, the tragic passing of Ken King, right, who has obviously been, you know, such a huge part of that organization. I mean,
Flames president and CEO, for those who aren't familiar right. with his name, but yeah.
Yeah. And the Jets as well. Like, I mean, I think, you know, just to play the devil's advocate here, I think, you know, even though I think that, you know, the Flames would give the Jets a run for their money. And even though I would go with the Jets probably in, you know, 4 or 5 games, you know, the Jets could end up being one of the most dangerous teams when you consider they have, you know, the ace in the hole with Connor Hellebuck. And if he gets hot and they get into that opening round, and whether they play St. Louis or Colorado, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we know that, you know, that series against the Blues could have easily gone the other way. You know, and Schwartz, you know, had something to say about that. But I mean, the Jets could be one of those teams of the 8 teams, you know, that we're talking about that, you know, wouldn't have otherwise had an opportunity, you know, to be in this qualifier. I mean, they have a lot of dangerous weapons up front. And I, Scott, I mean, that's where playing some really good hockey. You know, you forget, you know, they'd won 4 games in a row. You know, Scott mentioned that game in Edmonton. I mean, it looked like the Jets, you know, might have put together a 6 or 7 or 8 game winning streak there.
Well, Connor Hellebuck was, hey, he'd what, given up 7 goals in his last 5 games prior to the shutdown. So the Jets were, I mean, again, they were playing, they were clicking on all cylinders and looked probably some of the best hockey they played all year. But I mean, that doesn't matter anything 6 months later when the season's going to restart. So that's why this is such a crapshoot. I mean, I think I saw the odds come out from the betting sites. And again, if you're going to bet on this Stanley Cup tournament, you are basically flipping a coin. But I think the Jets were at 66-1 or something. I mean, I don't know. There seemed like there was some decent money there with that offensive talent and that goaltender and a defense that had been looking better back, you know, when the shutdown happened, when the lockdown started.
Yeah. And I do, I think there's an advantage. You know, everybody talked about St. Louis last year. The reason why they were so good when they got to the playoffs is they were playing a certain style of game that they had to rebound from being in last place on, I think it was January 7th. You know, so they'd been playing. So if you're the Jets and say St. Louis starts first and finish the seed at the top in the West, and they would play, I guess, the Jets and or whoever wins that series. But, you know, you can't tell me that little round robin is going to be as competitive as a 5-round series for your playoff life, right? So now you're going to have a team that has already in the head mindset of we're in playoff mode. And let's say that game goes to 5 games and it starts to click, you know, around game 4, or game 5 for the team who wins. I think there's a bit of an advantage for those teams. I think that's where the Jets become a bit of a dark horse if they get through that series, because I think I think the Jets also have to taste defeat in that series just to do it too, right? I think there's a lot of things you can relearn about your team and how they lose and how they win together and that sort of thing that you may have forgotten over the last 4 or 5 months or whatever it takes. But I think, you know, there's going to be a little more battle-hardened in terms of those teams coming out of that qualifying round, going against teams that aren't necessarily, you know, yeah, you want to play for the top seed and that sort of thing, but are those games going to be that hard, knowing that you really don't want to risk anybody getting injured, and at the end of the day, you're still going to get a reasonable matchup because you are a top 4 team, so you're going to play a team, a lesser team, or whatever you want to call it. But I think there's, you know, some advantage of being able to play that qualifying round for those teams, and you know, whatever you want to say about last year's St. Louis series, I think it would look a lot different this time around if that was the case, because, you know, the tables are kind of flipped, whether it's the Jets that are coming in or whoever wins that series comes in, you know, already in that mindset of playoff hockey.
Let's drop the puck, Scott, in July.
That is the last word on the NHL's return to play. The Jets and the Flames goes to the king of COVID coverage, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun. Scotty, want to thank you for joining us on the inaugural Legal Curve Hockey Show Zoomcast. For those of you who are wondering about our whereabouts on TSN Radio 1290, we hope to be back on air hopefully within the next month or 6 weeks, but like everything else in the world, with the precautions that are being taken with regard to this this COVID pandemic, that is up in the air. But stay tuned to our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. Stay tuned to illegalcurve.com. You'll have all of the latest news as to our whereabouts. And I think we'll probably do another one of these Zoom casts again. It was fun, presuming that I know how to actually end the recording properly so that this wasn't all for naught. That is about a 50-50 proposition.
Just keep it rolling, Drew. We'll just keep one just long
hours week. On end.
Yeah, we'll just come back in like a couple days.
There you go. Anyways, we will hopefully do this again. Like I said, I want to thank Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun for joining us to touch on COVID and touch on, of course, the Winnipeg Jets. You know him best as his Jets coverage, but he's doing a wonderful job on the news side of things. For my colleague, Ezra Ginsberg, who is in desperate need of a haircut, and for me, who am in desperate need of a hair transplant, we thank you for joining us this evening. We wish you and your family all the best, and like I said, for all your Winnipeg Jets news, for all your Manitoba Moose news, keep it locked to IllegalCurve.com and our Twitter feed, at IllegalCurve. Thank you, guys. Any final words before we say goodnight?
Stay safe. Social distance.
Stay safe. Absolutely.
Stay safe and social distance. Thanks, I like Tom. It there. Thank you, Scotty Billick.
Anytime, guys.